and welcome to my hearth. Now, from a storytelling point of view, moving house is a great device. Any change in a story can be used for effect and detail. You notice what is the same about the new house, but you really stress the differences. There couldn't have been a bigger contrast between the first house that we lived in the village and the second house. They had both been built by my father. However, the circumstances are very different. Mum and Dad moved out of London because of the smog that came in the early 50s, and Mum developed very bad asthma. But they moved to the house in Holbridge, which already existed. It was a lovely bungalow, and it was on an amazing plot right on the main road, and as I said, was surrounded with land and also a little wood. It had a front room and a kitchen and a bathroom and two bedrooms and a very nice conservatory. However, the family grew bigger because of my sudden arrival. In the early years, I shared a bedroom with my sister, which could be very dramatic and exciting. Mandy was heroic and definitely destined to be a superhero. She had a wild and adventurous spirit, which often led her into trouble. And I remember one very exciting evening where she pulled the wardrobe across the door so that my dad couldn't get to her to tell her off. We slept at either end of our bedroom, which was graced with a fire, a live fire, which we really enjoyed in the winter. As I said, we were a bungalow, and whenever we got our childhood illnesses, it meant that concerned relatives could stick their heads through the window to see how we were. In the heady days of the mid to late 50s, children caught everything. As far as I know, and as I say, there isn't anyone I can ask now, but I think the only thing I didn't get was scarlet fever. However, I had amazingly dramatic mumps, which made me look like Winston Churchill. I remember my Aunt Rose sticking her head through the window and having a look at me and just declaring, "Poor little sod," in her best EastEnders dialect. I got measles and chicken pox and basically anything else that was going. One of the advantages of the little bungalow was that we were literally a couple of hundred yards away from the village school. So not only could we walk to school, but it meant that we could come home for lunch. Now, my sister was at the primary school, and for that whole time we were living in the bungalow. Remember, she was 5 years older than me. My mum had helped to design the new house, which I have to say was very beautiful. Firstly, it was a house, and it had a roof that was based on a Dutch barn. It stood in a very large plot of land. We had two lawns and a driveway and a separate garage. And the garden was a flight of low steps, which were very long, up to the house. So we were well above the road, which was important, because we were at the bottom of a hill, and even in Essex at those days, it did rain a lot. My father put in a road, and he asked other people in the street whether they wanted him to create a driveway for them off the road, but of course they had to pay for it. Most did, because in the rainy season, it would have been impossible to drive up that hill, which turned into a quagmire. At the top of the road, on the left-hand side, as you were going up the hill, was another bungalow which had been built by my father. This, I think, was the original holiday home that they had in the late 20s and early 30s, and it was called Sea Mist, because on that side of the road you could see the river. You got an amazing view of the river from the upstairs of our new house, and I think that was part of the attraction. I just assumed when I was little that everybody was surrounded by water, because obviously when we were in the Lake District, we had more water than we needed. My father and his team of friends that helped him build all of his houses took quite a long while to build the house. They were all in full-time work, so they only did it when they had free time, which was mainly weekends. I think half of the attraction was my mum's catering, because remember, she was the most amazing cook and did fantastic cakes, so all their tea breaks were relished. The downstairs of the house was off a central hallway, and on the left-hand side from the front door, there was a front room and a kitchen. On the right-hand side was the study, where my father worked and did his stamps, and where my piano was for my practice, and then behind that was the bathroom and a separate toilet. Across the back of the entire house was a very large veranda. Enclosed and leading to a big coal store. Part of my mother's requirements was that we had a solid fuel arger, because she had been brought up cooking on ranges in Cumberland and she really liked cooking with it. Of course, it was on all the time, and one of the things she made use of was doing slow cooking using the cooler oven and literally putting things in overnight so that they cooked really slowly. I got used very quickly to the tantalising smells that came from the arga 24 hours a day. It also provided us with continuous hot water. Upstairs was a huge water tank in an airing cupboard, and my mum stored all the bedding and linen in that, and all our clothes were put in there after they'd been washed and aired and ironed. In the front room was a burner which looked like the modern wood burners that you see in modern housing. That provided the water for the central heating system, and there was a pump that you had to plug in, and I think it was all done through some kind of back burner. Just as it was in Cumberland, it meant that part of the ritual of the winter was that we were forever tending and lighting fires. The arga had to be fed like some kind of relentless dragon, both morning and night. In the winter, the front room fire had to be kept going because we had no central heating without it. Now, because we owned both the houses that were involved in the process, we moved quite slowly when we did move. It wasn't a one day we live in one house, the next day we live somewhere else. There was a brand new state-of-the-art kitchen. There was brand new furniture in the much bigger living room, which had a settee which went all the way around the edges of two sides of the walls. Mum and Dad got the house ready to move in, and I think on the actual moving day, the thing that made the big difference was that we moved the beds. The whole thing was made much more complicated because we moved during the winter of 62-63. This was a particularly harsh winter, and it snowed on Christmas Eve, and the snow was still there at Easter. The new house was much further away from the little village school. So once I'd got there in my Eskimo outfit, you'll have to listen to earlier podcasts to hear about that, I stayed there all day and started having school lunches. By the time we moved, my sister had already gone to secondary school. So that was a much more complicated journey for her to catch the bus to the new school. What the bigger house did mean was that we could at last have a pet. I keep talking about sorting through some of the old photographs to put them on my Buy Me a Coffee site so that people can see some of these amazing places. But one of my pictures is my father with a photograph of a dog, which looks to be a spaniel. I do remember once my mum telling me that Dad had had a pet when he was younger, but for some reason, the dog was never mentioned. I have a feeling that he had the dog before he went away to the war. And I could be completely making this up, but I've got a feeling that he may have had to give the dog away because of him being in the army for such a long while. Now, we had all of this space and all of this land, so it was possible, as I say, for us to acquire a pet. And we got two pussycats that revelled in the name of Salty and Peppy. Salty was white with tabby patches, and she was a strong-willed bruiser. Incredibly loving, but very independent, and she would go out and mouse and do all sorts of things. For some strange reason, and I really don't know why, I think Salty knew that our family really loved birds. As I say, we were surrounded by land, farmland and the river, and a wood opposite us. And so we had very many birds that visited us. There were all the usual chaffinches and blue tits, but there was also jays, which we seemed to attract. Now, Salty didn't attack those, but restricted herself to any vermin that was around the place. Really, she should have been Mandy's cat, because she was like a pirate of the Caribbean. I watched her pounce on a rat that was nearly her size and ride it like a Wild West rodeo cowboy. Peppy was completely the opposite, and she was Mandy's cat, and she looked like a powder puff ball. She was extremely beautiful and had incredible eyes. I have a feeling that she wasn't particularly bright, but she was very easily pleased and loved to be cuddled. She came to a traumatic end, unfortunately, and that she was attacked by a dog, and the vet thought that the dog might have mistaken her for a fluffy rabbit because she was so powder puff-like. Anyway, we had to deal with the fact that she was beyond saving. And that was one of the first major traumas of our lives. My cat lived to be a ripe old age and eventually decided that she'd had enough. By then, of course, I was at boarding school, and so my mum had taken over looking after her. After she went, my mum said that we weren't going to have any more pets because it was too traumatic. Now, what about the other animals that lived around us? More of them next time.